Today's episode is brought to you by Slate House Publishing, recorded at Wayne Howard Studios.
Merry Christmas, everybody. This is Jeremy with Slate House Publishing presents Lit Bits.
Oh my God, you got it right.
I got it right. And with me as always is Trevor and Curtis. Hey guys, Merry Christmas.
Hey, Merry Happy Christmas. Holidays.
Merry Christmas.
Feliz Navidad.
I love this season. This is my favorite
I knew a
season.
Girl in high school. Her name was Feliz Navidad.
What? No, really?
Yeah, really.
So for real. Was her last name Navidad and her first name was Feliz?
Yep.
That feels like someone who with the last name Wood who names their kid like Ply.
Ply Wood.
Yeah, Ply Wood or Redwood.
Yeah. Redwood makes sense. I mean,
Redwood. You
know, Feliz. Oh man,
Feliz.
Christmas enthusiast.
I mean, in a way that like that's a great first name because Feliz just means happy, right? Yeah. So, I feel like good name choice there. Yeah. Little on the nose with Feliz Navidad, though.
Yeah.
But also that begs a question, like which family line was named Navidad? Because Navidad is Christmas.
Yeah, I don't know.
So, like.
I mean, I didn't get to know her that well, and. Think about this is high school for me. This is like 80 years ago.
So. Oh, yeah.
Is Christmas a name that people go by?
I guess so.
There was Dr. Christmas Jones on the Pierce Brosnan 007 movie. What was it? The World Is Not Enough.
There was a Lloyd Christmas on Dumb and Dumber.
So first off, I thought you were being real. Like, there's a real person out there named Dr. Christmas Jones. And then you clarify it's from James Bond. And I'm like, well, the same cast that gave us Pussy Galore.
Pussy Galore. Yeah, well, the other night, my daughter said at dinner, she said, I want to tell Christmas jokes. And so I got my phone and I typed in Christmas jokes, but I accidentally typed in Christmas Jones. And then it showed Denise Richards, and I was like, "What?" And I remembered all of a sudden.
All so, right,
whatever.
I mean, there are worse things to Google than Denise Richards, yeah. I guess.
We'll stop there.
But yeah.
I was going to say something, right? And they just shut me up, guys. Yeah. It's not fair, really.
Changing the subject.
Christmas is my favorite season, though. Legitimately, of all of the holidays, I feel like I get into Christmas the most.
I have my house all decorated.
Same here.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'll send you guys a picture at some point. And unlike the Halloween decoration that I never posted on Twitter, I will actually post the decorations for the house on Twitter.
You posted those on
did
Twitter.
I?
You did. Yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe
it just wasn't on Halloween.
Jeremy built a COVID library in his house during the lockdown, right? Didn't you build a little library in your
I
house?
I built the library, well, built but it was pre-COVID.
He built the library just after they
I thought
they
it was the result
the
of being locked down. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I don't...
No, that library is sick, too.
At any rate, it looks great, and you should decorate that all Christmassy, I think.
I think we might. Absolutely. I don't know. We usually put the tree out there, but I don't know if we're going to put the tree out there now.
Okay.
We might change some of our traditions, we might change a little bit. I don't know if we're going to change all of them. But actually, no, we're not. We're going to keep some of them because we have some really great traditions.
It'd be kind of weird if you change traditions because then they're no longer traditions, right?
How many of you out there, right? How many of you out there eat goose for Christmas?
I've never had goose in my life.
I cook goose every year for Christmas.
Yeah, the goose is pretty good too.
Save me a little sliver and bring it on over here.
I will save a sliver of goose.
Sliver of goose. Is that's got to be a new quantity for us.
A sliver?
Bring a sliver of goose.
A sliver of
goose. No, but I like a sliver of goose.
It's a nubbit.
Of whatever.
It's officially called a nubbit.
Oh, that's the old sounding unit of measurement. Three nubbits.
Yeah. Three nubbits makes a sliver.
Yeah. It'll cost a penny farthing.
There are some Christmas traditions that I think... you know, we've kind of started in the last couple of years that, mm-hmm. that I've really fallen in love with. Like, I didn't know Christmas goose was going to be a thing. even though, like, every, you know, it's,
bad
it's
news
like,
for geese.
It's the thing. Yeah. Yeah.
They're like, what?
My father, this is a true story. My father thought of shooting some geese in the backyard, you know, to cook like a Christmas goose. And then he Googled and found out that geese mate for life. And he's like, I can't.
Oh, you got to kill both of them.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
You gotta kill those
bears. and that, but that also assumes that you spend like weeks, like tracking these geese
observing
and figure out which ones are the
We're
mates.
Stalking geese
so you
now.
Shoot them both.
If you want to kill geese ethically, I'm sorry. That's how it's done.
That's how it's gotta be done. You gotta hire a PI.
Don't split up a family around. Because you want to eat.
Right.
Have taken a restraining order out on us.
Yeah.
Right.
They're just going to get more aggressive. They're already like biting your ankles and stuff.
Right. We also, what's the, I don't feel bad about killing geese.
Trevor, the weirdest tradition. Well, I think it'd be weird now, but it's not historically. It isn't weird. We tell ghost stories.
Yeah, that I was getting to that someday.
I thought I'd get us back on
Christmas
track.
Christmas-themed ghost stories or just ghost stories?
No, just ghost stories. Because back in pre-Christmas times, right, like that was kind of the tradition.
It's pre-Christmas
You tell ghost stories to one another. Some of the most famous ghost stories that we have from literature are actually framed as Christmas ghost tales. Wow. So take, for example, Turn of the Screw, right, by mm-hmm. Henry James, a famous ghost story. Perhaps one of the most famous gothic horror stories out there. The framing device for that story is a bunch of people who are sitting around telling ghost stories to one another, and one of them says, well, if you think children ghosts are scary, what if I gave you two ghosts in a story, right? And so
that's the turn of the screw.
Right. Ooh. So he's the reference there is like, I'll give you two turns of the screw, as in I'm going to give you two ghosts in one story.
That's value.
That is.
Yeah. Yeah. He really gave us our money's worth.
Do we still
story.
Just pay a farthing?
Yeah. Yeah. Just
how
a farthing.
Farthings?
It's sixpence.
So
it's sixpence for two ghosts. Pence.
Or a sliver of goose if you got it.
You remember that time? Okay. You remember that time when you were talking about getting paid for stories, for short stories? You were like, yeah, I get 10p per read or whatever. Yeah. And he's like, is that 10 pounds? I'm like, no, 10 pence. And he's like, what pence? The fuck is a pence?
I didn't know. I don't know British currency.
This is a penny. It's just a penny.
That Mary Poppins song, Tuppence. I think that's what
Tuppence,
she's talking.
Tuppence. Tuppence. Two pence.
Two pence.
Two pence. A tuppence.
A tuppence. Okay.
That's right.
I had to do some research on that one. I had no idea.
Yeah, it's funny how things, you know, just you miss it the first time.
It'd be great on Twitter if some of you out there do the same thing, like carry on the same similar traditions. We'd love to hear some of the, we'd love to hear just some of your traditions that you carry on. And two, if you've got some good like ghost stories or something for Christmas time, drop them in the, respond to us on Twitter.
Like send it to us.
And not just a bunch of jump scares. Like,
yeah,
really
don't
try.
Do jump scares. Yeah.
Is there such a thing as a literary jump scare?
Oh.
Is that just the
suddenly? You
turn
the page and it just says boo. A pop-up book. Yeah, it's a pop-up book.
Yeah. I just love the idea of somebody opening a book and they're like, oh, shit.
What book were you reading? Oh, it was Amityville Horror.
Oh,
where, like,
yeah.
Every sentence had a fucking exclamation point.
Exclamation point.
That's like, oh my god! And then there was a ghost. Scare.
Yeah. No. That's literally how the book is. And there was green slime. Like, that's a real thing.
And then he died.
Book.
And the walls were bleeding.
Oh my god.
Yeah. I made the joke before. It reads like a camp counselor who's still trying to be relevant to.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. Share with us your like ghost stories. Really, I think that this is one holiday tradition I can really get into, and one that I've really loved is the exchange of ghost stories on Christmas Eve, you know?
Yeah.
One of the most famous ghost stories of Christmas is Charles Dickens's A Christmas Carol.
Hey, do you know Marley's dead?
Who?
Marley's dead.
Marley?
Marley is dead. That's how the book opens up. Like,
yeah, Marley's
dead.
He
spends like a whole paragraph. I'm opening the book now. Marley was dead to begin with.
That's how it starts?
That's the exact first sentence. Marley was dead. So we have to emphasize, Marley is dead. Yeah.
That's actually a pretty good first line, though. Marley was dead to begin with.
Yeah, he sets up this whole thing like he wants you to be very clear that Marley's dead. Yeah. And the first time you see him is like in the door knocker. Like when Scrooge comes home.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, I'm pretty positive he would be dead. Like, I can't.
Well, he hallucinates old Marley showing up the whole time. Right?
Do you think it's a hallucination?
I think it's a ghost. Because, Charles Dickens is setting up for us, like, this is a ghost story.
That is such a creepy scene, too.
It's got four ghosts. This book is terrifying. Like, you know, as much as we romanticize the movie, because the movie we romanticize the story because the story is really about community, and it's about, you know, like learning to live charitably to one another, which for Dickens is a strong theme in all of his work. But it's also something that I think in the 19th century, when this book was written, was really important, you know, this idea of like building a community in right. a world that was rapidly changing around you, right?
Yeah.
Christmas was not very popular through the 19th century.
Well, it was very classist too.
Like, oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like yeah. you could only, it was almost like affordable only for like the wealthier of, right. The, of the Victorian.
Right, England. Right. Yeah. yeah. But I mean, if you think about 19th century living, you know, society, it was changing very rapidly. There was a lot of industrialization going on. Mm-hmm. And people, you know, the people that Charles Dickens was writing about, certainly it felt like they were being left in the dust. Right. Yeah. And in sometimes, you know, they were literally living in sewage, right? Like, you know, 19th century.
It was like tenement living in this.
Yeah. 19th yeah. century England is really kind of a scary place to be.
Right. Right.
We talk more about it, a little bit more about it in our Dracula episodes coming up.
Yeah.
So in our Dracula series.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff going on there. Yeah. So when you think about like all the change going on in the 19th century, in the United States and in Britain, which is where Charles Dickens is writing, it became more important to have a moment, right? To kind of try to craft, to create a season in which, you know, you could kind of take a breath and kind of like try to just cope and acclimate yourself to the world around you.
Right.
And so I
and
think
reconnect
that,
to your fellow
and
man.
Yes, absolutely yeah. reconnect.
Yeah. Especially those less fortunate, because it's almost like he's saying like, hey, here's a time. Yes, we have these good fortunes for some of us, but we need to realize that right. not everybody has this, and we need right. to reach out to those who don't,
yeah.
so that we can maybe improve their life as well too.
Right.
Even
right.
if it's just for a moment.
Because I mean, as much as we talk about the Industrial Revolution being so good for, you know, kind of raising the standard of living for a lot of people. No, I mean, there are a lot of casualties to the Industrial Revolution,
sure,
yeah. and there are a lot of casualties to the kind of rapid growth and the explosion of wealth concentrated in the hands of very few, you know, that other people didn't enjoy. So yeah. I think Dickens was, you know, he was really preoccupied with a lot of that in his literature. And then he comes to this story and kind of sets up this, what I think is a really beautiful story about, you know, learning how to be more charitable, but also fucking terrifying. I mean, this book is scary. it really is. He hits the horror beats real hard in a couple of spaces, you know, in the early
my
part of
favorite
this book.
So far, and I'm rereading the book, so I wanted to be through it by the time we recorded this, but I didn't get a chance to finish it. But I mean, we're all familiar with the story, so we don't have to necessarily rehash yeah. the story. But my favorite scene so far is when Marley comes to visit Scrooge, and Marley has a handkerchief wrapped around his head because that's what they did to corpses, like when they were, you know, to kind of keep them kind of like the closing of the eyes.
Oh,
but yeah. but they do it. They do it because the you know, everything kind of relaxes at that point. And like nowadays they don't have the handkerchief. They just sew the lips shut.
The lips shut.
Yeah. But they do it because the mouth will like hang open. Yes. And Marley does that. He unties the handkerchief at one point while he's talking to Scrooge, and his jaw just drops to his chest.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
It's frightening
well,
as hell.
And then Marley himself, I mean, like, you know, Marley's wrapped in chains, and he explains, like, the, you know, the chain thing is all about, like, what you carry with you into the afterlife, right?
Oh, okay.
So
right.
the length of your chain is basically built on, like, you know, like, whose life did you make worse?
Right, right.
You know, kind of. And so he's like, riddled in these chains, and he's talking like telling Scrooge, like, you don't even know what's waiting for you on the other side.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you think I'm bad, bro, you're in for a time.
Well, and then Scrooge watches him as he backs out the window, and he's like beckoning Scrooge to follow. So Scrooge kind of steps up to the window, and then Marley goes through. And then Scrooge hears like all the other ghosts that are also out there, and he sees yeah. them flying by the window and like wailing.
Yeah.
And it's oh man, wow. it's fucking
it's terrifying.
So do you think
and
most...
even the ghosts that show up, you know, the ghosts of Christmas present, future, and past, you know, the ones that show up
in another order than that.
Yeah, well, yeah, whatever. It's past, present, future, right?
Sure.
Yeah, they're terrifying.
They are.
They're so scary.
Do you think that most people don't realize how scary the story actually is?
I think so, because yeah. you know, like as a Christmas stories usually go, right? We've lost the taste for real horror ghost
right,
stories.
Right,
right, right. We have lost
well,
the.
We've when Disney, Trevor says Disney-fied everything.
Right.
By this point,
yeah. When Trevor says we, he means you. out there.
Yeah, maybe.
You layman.
You
no,
layman.
I mean, you know, what used to be a real pastime, because you like a pastime was you gathered around for Christmas and you told ghost stories to one another.
And back then it was like a fireplace and everybody had to get in that one spot together anyway. To get warm, so it just probably just facilitated
it's
that whole
dark,
thing.
It's dark, it's cold, nights are longer than the days.
We're all packed into one room anyway. Might as well tell stories,
and
right?
You don't have TV, right? So what do? You share stories with one another, and ghost stories are really popular. Mm-hmm. Through the 19th century especially, it was like ghost stories were one of the best-selling, you know, kind of genres of story out there.
Mm-hmm. And now when people think of Scrooge, they think of Scrooge McDuck. You know, like
that's whose voice I'm reading. Yeah. Like I hear whenever I read this book.
We've come that far since the original story that you imagine a cartoon duck instead.
So as they're interpreted, you know, and and you know, like
that cartoon was still pretty terrifying in some parts of it, though.
It's good.
Oh,
yeah, it was good.
The part where at the end, where like the Pete character shows up as the ghost of Christmas Future.
Oh yeah,
he's so scary. As a kid, I was terrified.
The one with Bill Murray, Scrooged.
I love that movie.
That scared me. I was very little when it came out, so Bobcat Goldthwait running around with a shotgun was legitimately terrifying.
Yeah.
Bobcat Goldthwait in general with a shotgun is pretty terrifying.
There have been some recent...
I'm home.
Remember when he was famous?
There have been some recent efforts, I think, to try to recover some of that horror from this show.
Yeah.
I think Sci-Fi recently did, just within the last couple of years, did a rendition of A Christmas Carol, you know, starring Guy Pearce.
And
it really tries to delve in pretty hard with the horror stuff.
Right.
That, you know, and it tries to replace some of that grittiness. I
don't know if I've seen that one yet. I want to see it. I think I meant to watch it.
It's honestly pretty good. It got pretty middling reviews from critics because I think that a lot of critics are like, do we need another one of these? you know, how critics get. But I personally thought it was a pretty good watch. Like, I would watch it again.
Well, that's an interesting question if we need another one of these. I mean, we have so many things out there like A Christmas Carol, and some of these more popular stories that have adaption after adaption after adaption. And I feel like at some point, because these adaptions are always trying to do something new, we need an adaption to take us back to the source material. Like, I feel like that's the only way, like, you know, that old saying, everything old is new again. I mean, I think we need that. And I think so many adaptions of A Christmas Carol have been changed so much, they're doing something new.
Yeah.
That we need to go back to the source material and find the true horror in this story.
Right. Yeah, I think it's kind of quaint, the idea that you get visited by three ghosts who just tell you, like, hey, this is what is going on. And I think what's missing with the horror element is you know, the idea that Dickens was probably trying to lay down, that, you know, like, there are real consequences to your miserliness, right? Mm-hmm. There are real consequences when you... mistreat other people, you know,
because the ghosts weren't just there to tell him things and scare him. They were showing him the real world,
right?
They
were
showing him
in
real
a way.
World
the horror is kind of both existential and literal, right? Like you've got a literal scary looking ghost, because these ghosts are intense. They are not, you know, even the good one, which I think was the present one, mm-hmm. right? He's like, you know, jolly and fat, and he's eating a whole bunch of food and stuff. When he shows up, he's fucking terrifying. So even the one that's supposed to be nice and jolly, like, no, he's still a ghost.
He's still a ghost.
Still scary.
Yeah.
Well, and people all this season have been listening to me prattle on about like the objective correlative. But Dickens in this story is a masterclass of that, because he tells you, like, say, what Scrooge is like, or he tells you what something is. And then he shows you in a physical mm-hmm. description how this mirrors the internal of that person. Scrooge is described in miserly kind of physical description.
Oh, yeah.
And the ghosts, for each of what they represent, all are described in a manner that fits that purpose or that theme that they're serving.
Right, right.
Yeah, I think it's a really kind of awesome story in a lot of ways. I think that as much as it feels like, oh, this is just another one of those Christmas things that we've heard a billion times, like, you know, I keep making the joke, I think there are only 12 Christmas songs, and of the 9,000 different renditions there are, There are only renditions of the same 12 songs, so it can oftentimes feel exhausting that we don't have new content. You know, there's no new take on A Christmas Carol, really. And yet this is a story that I think, like, really we would be well served going back to this original. Like really digging into a lot of what this story presents, because I think that the themes are really strong in this tale and relevant. I mean, shockingly relevant even in 2021, because this thing was published in what, 1843?
I think so, something like that.
Yeah, right. 1843. And the stuff that Dickens was dealing with are the same things, the same feelings we have as people in 2021.
Right.
Look at political discourse today and look at the dissatisfaction there is in the concentration of wealth and the concentration of power in only a select few people, and this desire, you know, for a more equitable distribution of that wealth and that power among the people. The dissatisfaction that we see in politics today, I think, would be very, very relevant to Charles Dickens. And the message that he's trying to send here, you know, about Ebenezer Scrooge isn't just about, you know, you lowly working person, you should give gifts to your friends. That's not really the message. You know, the message is this idea that we're all human beings. We all share this societal space together, and we owe it to one another as human beings to be, you know, building a better life for one another.
Right.
We need to be chasing that utopian longing.
Yeah. I feel like Dickens would be disappointed with the way that the world has moved.
Oh, of course. Hands down.
Given his message, and his message is so universal across all of his works. Like, A Christmas Carol is only one, it's probably one of the more familiar ones, but it's not dissimilar to the message he's delivering in Great Expectations or Tale of Two Cities or any of these. Yeah. I mean, it's
Oliver Twist.
Yeah. I mean, there's this message of this kindness, of this, hey, you've been blessed with something that, you know, maybe others haven't, so it's your duty as a human being to help share that.
Right.
I mean,
because it's superficial, it doesn't last forever, and it doesn't put you on a level above everyone else.
Right.
Yeah.
In the end, you're all going into the ground, and that's probably the biggest.
Right.
Biggest message of A Christmas Carol.
And people don't like that message at large.
They don't.
And that's why we've got the cartoon Scrooge. That's why we've gotten to you know.
I mean,
so
there's a
maybe it is time to go all the way back.
Yeah. There's a lot of existential terror there. Right. Yeah. Like, what is your legacy?
Yeah. So that is a good rendition of A Christmas Carol, but there are more Christmas movies out there that I think are fun. Like, I know that we didn't talk about this, but it made me think of some, like Krampus.
Krampus? I didn't see it.
You haven't seen Krampus?
No. But I like the story.
You've got to see Krampus.
It's so delightfully German and awful.
It is a ride.
People don't realize how much of Christmas, they think Christmas is like this religious holiday. Christmas is so fucking occult. Like, they don't get it.
Okay, so.
Like, there's so much
occult
shit.
In a way, no, right? Like so much of what we know of as Christmas is really just industrialization, right?
Yeah.
Like and marketing. So I think there are multiple different, I don't know, impulses, if you will, like different cultural influences that shape the Christmas we know. The Christmas we know, I think, are formed largely in two parts. One is like what Dickens really repopularized Christmas for a lot of people.
Oh yeah,
and in fact,
the traditions that you and I follow, like the goose and the telling of ghost stories, all come from Dickens, popularizing this.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So the
Christmas tree is German.
Right. Yeah. So I think that, like, symbolically speaking, right, like the reason why Christmas is kind of centered where it is because there's a lot of like Yuletide kind of celebration that was a lot more like, I hesitate to call it pagan because I think that pagan is just a catch-all term in that phrase. It's kind of a conglomeration of multiple different old traditions celebrating this time of year, right? The coming of winter,
burning solstice of a pine tree, like, totally predated Christian.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
The
word Christmas itself, you know, comes from the Middle English Christ Mass, right? Which was like the message of Christ, and I think that gets tacked on to some of this celebration, you know, this celebration time, again, as Christianity, you know, sought to reclaim a lot of that space that was originally shared by these other cultural
And that's the key, you know, festivities. That's what Christianity has done ever since. Wow, I didn't want this to become... I said this before in an earlier episode. I didn't want this to be a religious podcast.
Go there.
Hey, I'm pushing it that way.
I know you are. You're going to end up... But that's what Christianity has done. I mean, any time that as they spread Catholicism and they came to new cultures, they would adapt those mythologies from those and those customs from those other cultures into their religion.
Well, because you have to. I mean,
and not smoothly either.
No. Sometimes it's very blatantly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, there's plenty of evidence. I'll air quote if you believe in this sort of thing, like. To say that the Christ of Christmas that we celebrate wasn't even born in December. He was born probably in like April or like a warmer month.
Yeah.
So, but because there was like the Greek Saturnalia, there was a Roman Saturnalia there, and there were other like kind of pagan, I know you don't like that word, but non-Christian or non-Catholic traditions.
The reason why I say like anti-pagan is because I think paganism itself was like an actual codified religious and now it's become a catch-all term to apply to all of the many different things that are non-Christian, and I think that there's danger in that, right? Yeah.
And it's even used as a kind of weaponized word by certain religious people.
Right,
pagan, that's like a finger-pointing word, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
But again, that's something that the Christian kind of belief kind of has you do.
There's kind of
you create catch-all vilifying terms.
And as a kid, I always asked my mom. I was always confused about Christmas because, like, for us, it was about Santa and stockings and ornaments and all that stuff. And then I knew I had friends, and they had the nativity scene in their yard, and everything was so Jesus-oriented. And it didn't bother me. It was just like, why don't we have a single Jesus thing at our house? And so when I asked about it, it was like, I got these really confusing answers. And it took me a very long time to realize what happened there.
Yeah. Growing up as a hardcore conservative Christian, right? Like, we were always told, like, Jesus is the reason for the season.
Yeah. I'm like, well, then what is Santa Claus then? Yeah. Where does that fit?
What's Krampus?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But I think what's interesting is, like, you know, as I grow older and I look at what Christmas means to me and what I think Christmas means to, you know, a lot of these cultural texts, I lean back on, you know, kind of what Dickens was doing, which is like, you know, this idea of kind of celebrating the communities we live in and celebrating each other and making that kind of a focus. I lean back on these impulses that created Christmas in the 19th century to begin with, which was, you know, this feeling of like being overwhelmed by the way that society has kind of, you know, shaped through market forces or
I'm gonna
the forces of industrialization.
I'm going to attempt to create a new word here, and you guys can laugh at me all you want. Mm-hmm. That's fine. I'm used to it. Dickens, it feels like, with all of the spiritual message behind like the idea of Christmas, it feels like with the story he secularizes it.
Secularizes?
That's a real word.
I would say that's a word.
That's not a fake word.
Did
that's
I not make up a new word?
No, that's a real word. Secularize.
No, it's a verb.
Yeah. It's a verb. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like that's what he's doing, though. I feel like he's taking a little bit of the, like, for those of you who aren't spiritual, here's a good, you know, earthly reason, a real humanitarian reason why you need to be doing this.
Yeah, right. Well, and that's very, I think that's very Dickensian in itself.
Yeah.
Right? Like, to secularize, I know, I use the word too.
Dickensian?
Yeah.
Dickensian. Now there's a word.
That's a real word.
That might be a made up word.
No, that's a real
Dickensian.
That's a real term in literature.
Yeah.
Awesome.
To describe the literature of Charles Dickens. Yeah. But I think that, you know, what he does is he tries to moralize a lot of the, you know, the kind of the human impulses that he wants to see. You know, things like charity, like building a more charitable society, you know, a more equitable society.
Right. Yeah. Those are such tangible ideas, too.
Yeah,
It's not up in the air. It's not up for interpretation. Right. It's just like,
Yeah. So yes, in kind of secularizing Christmas... at the same time, I think he's still trying to moralize through this story and help us kind of, you know, wrap our heads around it. But I find that impulse to be really like the reason why I get so into this season, I think, is not just because of the decorations, because I love the decorations. Let's right. be real, like gingerbread men and Christmas trees. I love them. I love them so much. The Christmas lights. I absolutely adore the colors of Christmas lights.
Having heard you say all that about, you know, the Dickensian reasons for for enjoying Christmas so much, that's I'm probably always gonna think about that, like from now on. You know, that's just a really cool.
Yeah,
it's the end of the year. Mm-hmm. So much shit has happened.
Right,
we're a family in a house. It's cold. You know, it's like it just makes so much sense.
Let's take this season as kind of a breather to recenter right. ourselves on like, you know, what are the reasons why we do what we do, and who are we, and how do we wish to feel about other people? Right. I think that, you know, whether it be, you know, a COVID world where, you know, you're just like so exhausted by
we need that fucking breather more.
By so much of the change. No, really, like so much of the change that happens on the daily through our modern world, and it's so hard to keep up, taking that space to breathe. I also think it's really important in you know, such polarizing times when, you know, you look out the window and you see you know, flags waving for a president who is not even a president anymore.
Right.
And just like this divisory, I think, rhetoric that we see fed to us in media all the time. I think it's a good chance to sit back and remember, like, we are human beings. And despite what differences may exist, and I don't mean to dismiss those differences, you know, but I do think that we should still remember, empathetically, you know, we all live this same struggle together. We all live in this same kind of difficulty. And I think that each according to their ability, you know, we should be paying attention to
how can we think and act charitably.
Yeah, exactly. We're all human beings, you know, regardless.
Call me a pessimist, but I think like right now, that type of thing is going to fall on a lot of deaf ears, you know?
Yeah.
Right now, it's so divided. Yeah. Nobody's thinking about, like, that's, you know what, true. Guys? We really do have a lot in common. It's like so nice to talk like that and think, but I think there's a lot of people right now that are just like, they're not in that world.
That change has to start with you, right? The change has to start. Like, you can't control other people's actions, but you can look at your values and do your best to live to those values. And I think that what Dickens is trying to lay down, you know, in this story, essentially, is like, you know, here we have a very selfish man, and he's trying to get this selfish man to reconsider his life and to see empathetically the people around him. And one of the tragedies, I think, of Ebenezer Scrooge, as we get in the novel, is that Scrooge was not always the way he is. Scrooge was not always the miser. It was not always the curmudgeon who hated Christmas.
And that's what makes him the everyman. It could happen to you too. Because
exactly.
You're a nice person.
Years and experiences have hardened him.
Right.
To the point that he feels like he has to be the way he is in order to deal with the world he lives in. And what Dickens is trying to remind us is like, although years may be hard, that does not mean that you need to harden.
You can
still take that, roll with that, and find compassion for the person next to you.
It's what makes you human.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is a message that they need now more than, I think now more than ever, people need to hear this.
Yeah.
They need to be familiar.
Like I say, it's really interesting to me how the you know, realistically speaking, how the pressures of, you know, the world have not really changed all that much in the 170 years since this thing was published.
Right, right. The veneer changes, but the underlying forces are all.
And now we have a lot more Scrooges in the world. It feels like.
Right, right, right.
So instead of being a Scrooge, you know, I really stress this. You know, I think there's this material impulse that charity means that you must go out and buy, you know, a whole bunch of gifts for people. I don't think that's the impulse. I think the impulse of like living charitably is simply acting with empathy.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
Yes.
Looking to understand the people around you, they have individual struggles of their own, and you should. You know,
it doesn't cost you money.
Yeah, it doesn't cost you money. It doesn't even take very much time. Let go of your anger. You know, like to let go of your dislike for a certain person. You know, it costs you nothing to to let the dude cut you off in traffic.
Right.
You
right.
know what I mean? Like, right. you know.
And that's why I love, we mentioned that Bill Murray version of Scrooged, you know. Mm-hmm. That's why I love that movie, because this is what he's saying at the end. He's talking about, you know, it doesn't have to be expensive. You see somebody hungry, give them a sandwich. You see somebody cold, give them a blanket, you know.
Right. right.
I mean, it's small acts of kindness.
Yeah, and, right. Yeah.
And that's
yeah, exactly. And those small acts of kindness add up over time. You know, oh, much yeah. like the small acts of selfishness add up to over... the chains that you carry in the afterlife.
Yeah.
It's the kind of profundity you would expect from Bill Murray.
It is.
Yeah.
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 So, I don't know. I don't know how long we want to take this. I feel like we've reached kind of a natural conclusion here. I think in the spirit of the season, we want to keep this episode kind of short so that you can all get back to, you know, spending time with your family, spending time with your friends and your loved ones, showing that empathy, showing that kindness. And we have a lot still coming up for you guys. Yeah. We have...
Before we get into our closing parts, you know, in the spirit of you know, charitable giving, I don't have presents for you because I'm broke AF. but I do want to say, you know, like one of the highlights of my year, and we'll talk about this in our year-end review coming up next week, but you know, the highlights of my year is being part of this community that we've built. You know, I think that our listeners are part of that community. I am so gracious that we have, you know, the people that are out there and our Russian bots that are, you know, listening into us like every week. That's been, you know, just a real source of joy. You know, Jeremy, I think that our friendship has deepened over this project. You know, the episodes that we've recorded and the way that we come together to talk about this stuff really just, you know, continues to deepen my life, enrich my life. And I'm super grateful for that friendship.
Me too, buddy. Me too.
And then, you know, also to Les and Curtis here in the studio, being a part of this journey and you know, the charitable giving that you've given, you know, of your time and your labor in making this podcast come to fruition.
It was serendipitous that we kind of all crossed paths the way we have.
And it's been, you know, again, like as we talk to each other, as our relationship deepens, as this friendship, I feel, you know, carries forward.
It's been as enjoyable as it has been mutually beneficial.
Yeah.
Which is great. I love that we can be productive and still like, right. cultivate this kind of vibe at the same time.
Yeah,
it's my favorite.
So just, you know, in the spirit of not necessarily giving thanks, but you know, the spirit of Christmas, I just want to thank you for this year, for this journey, you know, for the many things that I think I'm excited
thank
that
you.
Are coming.
And stop it! You're gonna make me cry. And I'm not crying. You're crying.
Jeremy stop is crying.
Who's cutting onions?
I feel the exact same way, man. I do. Thank you. Back to you, Trevor, for everything you've done, for the friendship that we've built and just kind of being there for each other and kind of enriching each other's lives. And thank you guys, Les and Curtis, for the same thing. I mean, I haven't known you guys near as long, but I feel like we're all kind of hitting this path together. To our listeners and to our supporters on Patreon and to Karen, who we did our interview with last week. Just all of it. Just I'm really, really happy that I had this vision of Slay House Publishing and I was like, how am I going to make this grow and build? And it's like, whatever, the universe just kind of plopped like all of these, and this sounds selfish. Like it sounds like I'm being selfish. Like it plopped all of these relationships into my life to make this happen. But in turn, I feel like Curtis was saying, is like mutually beneficial. But more than that, this is just a chance to have a community. And
right.
So it became more, for me, it's become more than just a business venture. It's become a community of people where I can gather with and talk to and we can, you know, kind of talk about the things that we enjoy and we can enjoy each other's company. Right.
Full,
and I think that's healthy.
Full honest expression is difficult to come by. And I think that's what we're doing.
I think we're all about tearing up.
Just we're just keeping it real, man. So Jeremy cries a lot more than anybody knows, by the way. You can't ever see him, but he's usually got tears streaming down his face.
That's beautiful editing work by our producer. Yeah. Like, they cut out all my tears. Sometimes I'm just wailing.
He's very passionate. Yeah.
What I do is I before every episode when we come in, I just put Johnson & Johnson no tears shampoo all over my eyes and
tears. See, usually when we're in here, we're like recording for like, it's like hours at a time. It's like 2 or 3 hours we're usually in here recording. I eat a lot of greasy food, drink a lot of coffee so that my bladder and my intestines are very uncomfortable. It's like,
I had peanuts and black coffee. Yeah. All I've had to eat today is peanuts and black coffee.
That's the breakfast of champions.
Am I 80 years old?
Hey, everybody, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and just we're thankful to have you all, and we want you to be kind to each other. This is turning into a Jerry Springer episode. Be kind to yourselves.
Yeah, remember, after you all throw chairs at one another, to be kind.
Right, right.
Yeah, that's the Jerry Springer message.
I really love, I like to close every semester when I do my, like, thank you for being a part of my class speech. I incorporate the immortal words of Bill S. Preston Esquire and Ted Theodore Logan.
Oh my God. It took me a second.
Yeah. Be excellent to each other and party on, dudes.
Party on, dudes.